Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, this is the 8th designfootball.com podcast, the home of football design chats, let's call it that. Yeah. I'm Jay, I write blogs on designfootball.com and do this podcast, really. Today I'm joined by Austin Long from the Soccer Nomad blog and also podcast. We're going to discuss MLS, Major League Soccer, and the jerseys and kit therein. Hi, Austin. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, not so bad. So my knowledge of MLS is poor. I think I wrote one article for the blog about 8 years ago, which was bordering on derogatory. If you give me a bit of an overview of how the MLS works, how long has the MLS been going now?
So this season, 2016, will be their 21st season.
That seems a long time, because I do remember when it came about, and I remember when it was, people were in talks to start it up again, because there was something in the 70s, which you'll probably explain to me in a second as well. But I remember it being talked about in the early 90s, and there was the possibility of different zones on the pitch, where if you shot outside the area, you'd maybe get more points for a goal. I don't know how close that was to actually coming to fruition, but that's what I remember. Now, for it to be 21 years old now, it's quite established. So what are the origins for that? How did it come about, and what was the situation between the old league and the MLS? What was the situation of professional football in America?
Right. So the North American Soccer League was from 1968 to 1984. So some of your listeners may be familiar with, you know, Pelé played, and Johan Cruyff came over, Beckenbauer, Canelia, Rodney Marsh, those sorts of guys. So they grew really quickly. They had a expansion phase, got Pelé, and things were going, and then the money just dried up and the league collapsed. So that's 1984. After that, the league sort of, or soccer in this country, basically existed indoors. There have been a number of indoor soccer leagues with several acronyms, but that's how soccer sort of existed from 1984, late 80s, let's say. And then the World Cup came around. They bid and they won the rights to the 1994 World Cup with the sort of understood stipulation that a domestic league needed to be formed actually ahead of time, and that didn't work. That didn't happen. So 1994 World Cup rolls around. It's a huge success, huge crowds. It's a big deal. And they finally got enough investors. So they're investors, not necessarily owners, per se. And in 1996, they rolled out the first season. So there were, you know, 10 or 12 teams scattered around the country. And it, you know, took baby steps, and for the first 4 or 5 years, things were going pretty well. They maybe expanded too fast, in my opinion, and so they had to contract. So in the early 2000s, the league was hanging on by a thread, and they sort of restructured. They got some additional owner operators, and then they started climbing out. The league is very big on incremental growth, and they learned the lessons of the NASL and of the early years of the league. And they are not trying to buy, you know, they're not trying to buy Lionel Messi. They're not trying to buy superstars and have one team take control. It's a very even playing field. American sports is very particular about revenue sharing and trying to create parity so that every team has a chance, as opposed to super clubs that you might see in Germany or Spain or Italy, that sort of thing. So 21st season, the league is pretty healthy at this point. They're hoping to expand to 24 teams by, I think they say 2020 or give or take, with the eye of adding four more teams in the next window after that, which is the 2026-2028 range. But the league is healthy. They made a lot of rule changes that, you know, we can go into or not, but the league is a much different place, a much healthier place at this point.
Okay. All sounds good. And it's something that's, there seems to be more interest in Europe into MLS now than say there was a few years ago. It's taken a lot more seriously. Just on the subject of indoor leagues. So if you go, you could Google this and look at the old kits and stuff. There's fantastic old kits from the NASL, which also incorporates Canada. But this is something that a lot of people forget, is that the MLS and NASL are sort of North American leagues rather than just American. So it's Canadian teams are in there as well. So if you go back, you look at some of the old kits from the 70s or the 80s and some of the indoor team kits as well. They're quite interesting stuff there. And a lot of them sort of feature in sort of worse kits things. And there was a team which had tassels on the shirt, I think, which seems to pop up all the time. Regarding indoor teams, there's an indoor team in recent years called Portman Kunis United. Now, just Google them. I don't want to talk about them too much. We've talked about them on designfootball.com before, but they had some great shirts. Just an amateur team, just a bunch of friends, I would have thought, who came together and they put a team together, like five-a-side teams in the UK, for example. But if you go back and look at their kits and the reason why their kits are such, it makes for interesting reading. In terms of funding for the leagues now, for the MLS now, one of the big things is the Adidas deal, which is like a monopoly. That they make all of the teams in MLS wear an Adidas kit. Could you explain that for us as well?
Right. So in the beginning, it was each team sort of negotiated their own deal. And while it may have worked for them from a revenue perspective, it created the kits were all over the place. There were all kinds of sponsors. And anyway, we won't go into the design part of that right now. But anyway, in 2005, so Adidas took over as the sole kit manufacturer. And that really, it did tidy things up. It made the league more uniform. So American sports, again, sort of American sports reference, American leagues sign with one manufacturer. And they produce all the jerseys, tops, all that sort of thing. So MLS in 2005 went with that. And in 2010, they negotiated an 8-year deal for $200 million. So that runs through 2018. And so then in 2018, we'll see what happens. You know, you and I have sort of talked on site about what might happen, but, you know, we'll see what happens. Adidas has been very involved. They are involved in youth development. I mean, they are all in. It's not just like we roll out a shirt every year, every 2 years, and that's the end. They have the Generation Adidas deal, which helps take players who are college age, university age, and gives them a chance to sort of skip the college experience while saving money so that they can go back at a later date, which allows people to get into the pipeline sooner. So anyway, Adidas has been very involved.
Okay. It's interesting stuff. It does strike me as a national league. And I know that, I think Adidas also do the NBA, do they? Is that right?
Yes. I think they recently took over.
Yeah. So again, in both cases, it seems that we are, because there are big US manufacturers, New Balance, New Balance Warrior, which is the same company. There is Under Armour as well, and Nike, obviously the biggest one. Right. It surprises me a little bit that they haven't jumped on this, especially with Nike's involvement with soccer around the world. So they do pick up very, very big contracts. So for them not to have it, or certainly be bidding for it, but I suppose that's something we'll see in the years to come, whether Nike can actually come along with a bid to take it over at some stage, because they've got the national team now, which Adidas had before. So maybe at some point that will take over the league if this is the system that will continue.
Right. I mean, jumping in real quick, like Under Armour and New Balance / Warrior would in 2010 were, let's see, so what was the first year of, I mean, Under Armour really started your favorite thing is base layers. That's really where they started, and they've grown into football. They really took over football. I think their president or founder went to Maryland, so he took Maryland college football uniforms and went crazy with them in the same way that Nike sort of plays with the Oregon uniforms. And then they got involved with Tottenham, and they're slowly building up a soccer portfolio. Warrior jumped in with Liverpool and Sevilla, and now they switched to New Balance. They have Celtic, and I think in 2018, I don't know if they're going to have $250 or $300 million to jump in, and because I figured that's what the contract MLS would, the minimum MLS would ask for. I don't know if they'll have that sort of that money sitting around. And Nike, like you said, like Nike has U.S. soccer. It seems to me that they would just own American soccer. We'll see if that's the case.
In terms of the figures that you're talking about there, that results in a very small amount going to each club, I would take it, in terms of that contract. Compared with the big European teams, each MLS team is getting very little for the kit contract. Is that right?
Right. What I looked at is, so if you take us, it was 8 years at $200 million, so it's $25 million a year for the league. And if you, there's 20 teams right now. So if you divide that by 20, you're down to $1.25 million per team. And like you said, that's minuscule, in preparation. Adidas deals 75 million pounds a year for 10 years. That's insane. I mean, even looking at the top 10, even PSG is at 19 million pounds per year. That's through 2022. And then I was trying to maybe go outside of that and see if I could find anything South American, Mexico. And I found Adidas River Plate signed an Adidas deal, which is 60 million over 6 years. So they're still getting $10 million a year. And I think I converted it to 7 million pounds. But $10 million is a lot more than $1 million, and I think MLS has revenue stream issues. They their TV contract's really not worth what it is, what other big countries are worth. Their kit manufacturer is nothing like anything in the rest of the world. So they have a long way to go to have that sort of financial muscle to compete around the world.
It is interesting because we talk about the revenue streams in MLS. Obviously, based on the influence now, certainly from Europe, I suppose, you do have a central shirt sponsor in MLS, as opposed to the being completely club-centric, let's call it, or club or franchise, whatever you want to call it, in the other sports in America. So if you have anything on the front, you either have a big number or you have the name of the team. Which is something that you used to have in the MLS, but now you do have a sponsor, and they're individual deals as well. So each club can, even though they're forced to wear an Adidas kit, they can wear an individual sponsor as well, which is it's just strange. I don't know how does the American public react to that?
I think at the beginning it was strange. The early uniforms were so crazy that really the sponsor, if there was one, got sort of lost in the shuffle. Was not even people, that's not what people were looking at when they were looking at the early shirts. So for 2016, for the first time ever, each team will have an individual kit sponsor. And I think, that speaks to revenue stream. It speaks to forming partnerships with either local or national brands to get the MLS brand out there in a way. And in most of these shirt sponsors are tastefully done. They're not kind of crazy sort of out there logos. They're very, they're very professional looking word marks, and I think it adds to the jersey rather than taking away.
Yeah, we've seen the typefaces changes, so we'll talk about it in a second, but it does seem quite a sober way of presenting the brands, especially as opposed to, like I said, the early MLS shirts where it had the team name with, I don't know, flames coming out of it or something like that, which is so the graphical element. There's definitely been a sea change in the way they're presenting the shirts now as well. For shirt releases, how does this kit cycle work? Is it a yearly change for all the kits? How does that work?
So a couple years ago, probably about the time of the renegotiation for Adidas, they decide to release a new, so each team would release a new kit each year. Now, each kit is on a two-year cycle. So for instance, Houston Dynamo this year released their away jerseys. So they will hold over their 2015 home shirts, and that will be their home shirt for 2016. Then in 2017, they will release a new home shirt and then roll over the new black away shirt into 2017. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it is, I think we probably regard that as the old style of European, the old style European approach. So there's several ways that it's done in Europe. Sponsor changes can force a team into changing their shirt anyway. But now most teams change every season and all of the kits every season. But what it used to be was you would keep the both shirts for two seasons, and if it was staggered in some way, then one would be carried over and then the other one would change. Also, away shirts used to become the third shirt as well, but I'm not sure, is that how it works with the change, say secondary jerseys, do they become like a tertiary jersey in MLS, or does it not work like that?
It doesn't really work like that. Not every team has a third jersey, and they're trying to weed those out. There was a big consternation about the Portland Timbers third jersey from last year, which is one of the best jerseys in the history of MLS. But they basically, Adidas had to scrap that, and they were kind of, the vibe was no more third jerseys, but then they rolled out a third one for Seattle. So no one's really, as far as I can tell, there's no official policy, but MLS stays away from the third jerseys for the most part. Now there will be a special, maybe celebration. LA Galaxy did a supporter design third shirt a couple years ago. So they do pop up from time to time, but it's not really part of the portfolio.
Okay. I mean, you've mentioned a few jerseys there. Now, what you used to have is something called Jersey Week, didn't you? So shortly before the season started, there'd be a Jersey Week and everything would be released. And is that how it used to work?
Yeah. I mean, up until last year, that's how it worked. And I had, you and I had talked about this podcast. And so I was like, well, it'll be the first week of March leading into the first game on March 6th. So let's kind of playing around that. And then in beginning of February, they just started leaking out, this sort of drip, drip, drip. And almost all of them have been released. And so what they're framing it as is they are releasing the designs and they will be available for purchase, I believe, February 29th, which is that week before the season starts.
Okay. Now, some of the ones you've mentioned there, I think from a European point of view, now it's not something I really understand, but if you ask people in this country about MLS and you ask them, do you have a favorite team, it seems to be that the Portland Timbers are the big team in Europe, or I don't know, in London, where people are obsessed or get geeky about world football. Then Portland Timbers are the team. Now they've released a new secondary kit, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, so I noticed, like a hipster team, I noticed that in the publicity images, the player that modeled the kit had a big beard like a proper hipster. Now, I don't know if that's deliberate and that's a marketing thing, or if he's the best player or what, but tell us a little bit about the kit anyway.
Yeah, so for their away shirt, so Portland, if you know anything about the Portland Timbers, you would probably associate them with green. And green is their home shirt, but they're also known as the Rose City. And so they use this rose red. And that's been pretty much a staple of their away shirts since their introduction into MLS in, what was it, 2011. But for this season, they took the rose red and they blended it with black. So there's sort of repeating gradients. It's an interesting look. It's not sort of the black and red of, say, the most recent Germany away shirts. It's not like bars. It's more of a gradient transition. So it's an interesting look. There's also, if you look very, very closely, sort of thorns on the sort of edges due to, Rose City thorns, that sort of thing. It's an interesting look. I'm not sure if I like it or not. I think it might grow on me, but when I looked at it, I was drawn to the badge. The badge is amazing. Portland has one of the top crest badges in MLS. And what they did for this year is they made the axe and the chevrons blood red, and they got rid of the words Portland Timbers, and it looks amazing.
Okay, so this is the club crest that it doesn't have the words on it anymore. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, it's an interesting shirt. The thing I'd say about that is, as you say, when you think of Portland, you think of green, and that's so away from that completely. It's like, forget the home strip, the primary jersey completely. We've done something completely different, and it's almost like it's a different club. So I don't know much about MLS. If I looked at that, I don't know whether it's the home shirt or the away shirt. I don't know whether you lose a little bit of identity that way. Is that something that maybe has been leveled at it or has been a consideration?
That is a consideration. I think what they did is if you followed, like you say, like if you're like a casual observer or you turn into a TV and you're like, who's this team in red? And like Portland, well, Portland is what do I, there's, if you don't know the connection between the Rose City and the Portland Timbers, then there might be a little bit of disconnect. But in terms of MLS and branding, they're, you know, it does make sense because, like I said, their home shirt is very green, that sort of dark hunter green, and the away shirt has been red and white, and now it's just red and black. So I think they're just trying something different. A lot of the jerseys this year are trying something different, and this is not as out there as some of them, and I think it does work.
Okay. The other one you mentioned there was Houston Dynamo. Now, I have a sort of a soft spot for them because I don't know which year it would have been, it probably would have been 2007 or maybe 2008, they had a very similar primary jersey to the Olympique de Marseille third shirt from around there, which was like orange with pale blue. And I think that was the home design. This season they've got, I think it's an away one, and they've released it with paint it black as like a hashtag marketing thing, which is a black shirt with a chevron design in sort of three stripes. It's very similar to the Germany shirt that they won the World Cup in. How's that one being received?
It's very hit and miss. The haters go, why are we ripping off Germany? And the lovers are going, I love the all black shirt, finally. I was listening to one of the Adidas senior project manager, his name is Mike Walker. He was on the Extra Time Radio podcast, and he's been trying to get them, trying to get Houston to adopt a black shirt. They've been, their secondary shirt has always been white with some sort of orange trim and accenting and that sort of thing. And he's been trying to get them for the last couple of years to get to do a black one, and he finally convinced them. I think it works. I really like it. It's black. It's got these sort of varying orange chevron, but then it uses the baby blue, which is their third color, around the cuffs and the collar, and I really like it.
Okay. So this is, it is a secondary jersey, is it?
Correct.
Okay, so it is secondary. All right. So, I mean, this is the thing, and we bemoan it a lot of the time, but black is such a popular, for in terms of sales, it's such a popular color to use. So it's not, doesn't surprise me that Adidas are pushing for them to have it. I'm not sure. I like it. I like the design. The thing that's most interesting for me is the use of an old graphical element. We won't call it a template because the actual construction of the shirt will be on a more modern template, but to reuse a graphical design from a couple of years ago on a new shirt is interesting. It's something that Chelsea did in around 2011, I think, when their away shirt was black with a yellow graphic on the front, which was sort of copied from the France shirt that they wore at 2010 World Cup, which sort of highlighted the abdominal muscles on the right, on the front of the shirt. Chelsea had that. So it's not something you see too often, but Adidas, I think, are giving a lot of teams like a tartan effect for the Euro 2016 as well. So it's just this recycling of old graphical elements. And it's interesting, when it works, it's a good thing. But I don't know if I was a fan of a team who got a kit like that, I don't know if I'd be too pleased about it.
Well, from an American's perspective, I think I try to find you know, I sort of skimmed all the old jerseys in preparation for this. I cannot find an example of a chevron being used. Now, chevrons were used, you know, Manchester United used them a couple of years ago. Germany used them for their World Cup kits. You know, I wouldn't say it's a typical European design, but it's out there from time to time. And for American fans, I think they'll either love it or hate it. They may not understand that's used around the world. But I just think, it, you know, they took something that's like hardcore soccer nerds like us would be, you know, we can instantly rattle off like a bunch of teams or templates that's been used on. But for the casual fan, which a lot of MLS fans are, they'll be like, oh, that's cool. It's sort of like a V effect. And I think it'll be interesting. I think it will help that and the black, I think, will help the sales of this one.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And it's certainly marketed towards the casual fan or the fan that wouldn't necessarily ordinarily buy a replica jersey to have it in black. That's always the approach, or it seems to be the approach that you might not usually buy a jersey, but what if we give you it in black so it doesn't stand out too much and it's not a big problem. It is a classy shirt and black shirts just work out that way. So yeah, another one I've noticed is Real, I don't know how you pronounce this, but I suppose it's Real Salt Lake.
Right.
They've got a shirt which, just continuing the Spanish theme, I suppose, looks like the new Spain shirt.
And that's exactly what I wrote down. It's their new home shirt. So Real Salt Lake uses some combination of red, cobalt, and yellow. So last year they sort of had a energetic yellow band across the chest. They got rid of that. You know, this year's got it's mostly the red with the cobalt and yellow accents. I actually wrote down, I feel like it's a Spain ripoff and I don't like the pinstripes, but I don't know. It's okay. Real Salt Lake has been, in terms of kit design, has really been all over the place. Let me say that a different way. Real Salt Lake has followed the template in Real Salt Lake colors, and they've never done anything exciting. And this is just, it's just down the middle. They're very down the middle there.
Okay. How well supported are Real Salt Lake in terms of the other teams? Because, so where is this? Is this Utah? Is that where they're based?
Correct.
Okay. So how is this translated there? Is have people got on board with the idea? Because they're a relatively new club, aren't they?
For Real Salt Lake, they're hardcore fans. The Rio Tinto is where they play. That place is, they have real home field advantage there. Now, outside of that, they're usually a team that's hated. Most teams don't like them because they had a lot of early success. They're very sort of gritty, grindy. They work real hard. They're not necessarily too flashy. And so... I mean, Salt Lake, they are beloved. Outside of that, not so much.
Okay. Now, moving to California, I believe that's where LA is. The LA Galaxy, they've got a new primary jersey this season. They kept the last one for 2 years, as is the way now. This one's fantastic, isn't it? I particularly like it. Has it been well received?
This has been one of my favorite ones. They had, basically with the rebrand with Beckham, it changed their... They went whole hog on the rebranding and really changed everything.
Was this converted to white? Did they convert to white to welcome him? How did that work?
Yeah. Okay, so LA Galaxy, if you search out their first jersey, it was horrendous. I won't go on to that. But anyway, they basically used teal, gold, and black, and they usually used some sort of vertical bars. Then in 2003, switched to a sort of gold uniform with some green slashes. Anyway, so David Beckham comes in 2007. They go to an all-white strip I've read that it was to echo the Real Madrid transfer, so he kept that branding going. I think they wanted to – they redid the badge. They just totally revamped everything. But they went white with their sort of very dark navy blue and this sort of very – this rich gold yellow color. And in 2014 – So excuse me, in 2012, they went. They first introduced a sash on the home shirt. So it was a navy blue sash, had a geometric pattern. They did a 2014 version, which is similar. The sash was similar to what Spurs are wearing right now, sort of gradient across the shirt. And so in 2016, they actually did a two-color sash. It's the dark blue and the yellow. They had a similar version of this in the early 2000s. But I think my only complaint about this, oh, sorry, real quick, is they use the blue and the gold around the collar and the cuffs, and it really frames the jersey really well. But the sash is sort of not uniform, which kind of bugs me. I don't know how you feel about that, but the navy blue section seems to be slightly larger. Other than that, it's one of the best ones.
Oh, okay. I don't think I've actually noticed that. So they must be very close in size, but if you look closely, one's bigger than the other. So that would annoy me. I think OCD is a standard problem for the kit geek. So yeah, if it's slightly out, then that's a big problem. If it was out by a long way, I probably could handle it. But I'll have to take a closer look at that. The whole Beckham thing is interesting. So when David Beckham came to MLS, that boosted. I don't know if it actually had a long term effect, or whether moving away from the whole Beckham influence has actually been a better thing. But when Beckham came originally, my first thought was, okay, well, he's going to be the star player, and he's going to drop back down. He's going to revert to wearing the number 7 shirt. But he kept the 23, which he had been forced to wear at Real Madrid. And I think maybe that was a marketing thing to tie in with Michael Jordan in America, that sort of idea behind it. And now he's almost synonymous with it. But that shirt, for them to say, we're going to change everything to all white because Beckham's coming over. Obviously, it was a massive big deal. He was on all the billboards and everything. But for him, he's now gone, and you've kept the LA Galaxy have kept on wearing the all white kit. And I have actually liked a few of them. I'm not, MLS shirts isn't something I get too geeky about. I don't know too much about it. But LA Galaxy, that is now their look, regardless of the reasons for it. And this season's jersey, or the new season Cummings jersey, is a particularly good example of that from what I've seen so far. They have changed the wording on the sponsor, is that right?
They have. It used to be Herbalife in their sort of their font or their word mark, and they've changed it to Herbalife products or something. It doesn't look, that doesn't work as well as it has in the past, but it's probably like Sony when Sony went Sony Mini Disc, or Sharp View Cam. It's probably the same sort of idea.
Mm. Now, this is something that's going to drive people up the wall as well, in that for a lot of these teams, for uniformity and consistency, even if they're carrying over one of the jerseys, they've still changed the word mark for whatever. So this one, I think maybe LA Galaxy, the alternate jersey or secondary jersey, which has been carried over, and that has actually had the wording changed, hasn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so if you've bought a replica jersey and your team has kept the same sponsor, but they changed the font on the jerseys that the players wear, that would, for completism, I would imagine people will go out and buy it, or geeks certainly will. But for just the average fan to suddenly have their replica jersey made redundant must be frustrating, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think American fans are much, it would appear that they're much different in terms of that. I mean, yes, there are going to be, again, hardcore people who probably have every single jersey of their favorite MLS team. But I think a lot of casual fans are like, they probably won't notice, or it's like, whatever. They're just, it's, you know, they're, you know, for this example, their alternate jersey is a really nice navy blue. I really like that one. But they'll be just like, whatever. They won't even notice. It's not a big deal to them. For American fans, the American casual fan, A, will they buy the jersey? Probably not. And if they are, they won't notice, they won't care.
Okay. I think that's more evidence that the world doesn't actually act how I think it does in my own head as a kit geek. I think maybe that's the problem. And also, I quite like it because Liverpool did certain things like that in the 80s. I think Crown Paints decided they didn't like the way the logo was showing one season. So the following year, Liverpool had to change the way the logo was on the same shirt. So maybe that's just me. Another team, they're a very new team, and they've got they've got particularly striking kits is NYCFC or New York City Football Club. I'm not sure what they're really known as over there. They've got a new away shirt. So the home kit tends to look like Manchester City because they're linked to Manchester City or owned by Manchester City. The away shirt is a puddle effect. Is that right?
Puddle, ripple, concentric circles. It's interesting. This one I have a hard time with. The reasons why are I love navy blue kits in general. So this is a navy blue base, which is a switch from last year's black with a sort of orange and baby blue trim. So I love the navy blue. The energy, it's the circles. So the crest of NYCFC is the center, and then from there it ripples out, and it's supposed to represent the energy of the boroughs and so on. My first look at it, I did not like it, but I can see how this one would grow on me. And in conjunction with, if you've seen their marketing video, it's insane. They have Andrea Pirlo, Poku, and who's the third? Oh, David Villa. And they go out into the city and they sort of chit-chat with like NYCFC fans, and then all of a sudden they like hand them a jersey, and it's the new jersey, and people go nuts. And it's just the video is amazing. One of the best sort of unveils I've seen in a while. And I'm trying to divest myself of whether I like the jersey because of that, or I'm trying not to hate the jersey so much because it doesn't quite match the video. I'm obviously conflicted about it.
Now, I quite like it. I have heard that a lot of people have been angry with it. And the usual suspects, so the mainstream media in this country have said, oh, what a terrible shirt. Look at the stupid shirt that the NYC are going to be wearing next season. I actually quite like it. I actually think that it's a design that has popped up on Design Football before, but I'll take a look, and if so, it'll be on the notes. If there's nothing on the notes, then clearly I couldn't find it. I like it as a design. I think also it's the ripples coming out from the crest as well. So it's like these concentric circles, as you say, moving outwards from the crest, so that it's the focal point is the club like that. So I'm sure that's something they mentioned in the marketing, and I tend not to read that too much. It's good when people do something different, and this is something that seems to work quite well. And it's a changed jersey, and on changed jerseys you flex your design muscle, I suppose. So yeah, good for them on that.
Absolutely. They took a chance on this one, and if it sucks, then we live with it for 2 years and we move on, and then maybe they go back to a pure navy blue jersey or black or whatever. They did take a chance on this one. It's definitely not the worst jersey, and it's definitely not the worst jersey in the history of MLS. So, I think I'm not totally sold on it right now, but I think this one could grow on me.
Okay. How about this one then? The Columbus Crew for Columbus design. Now, I don't know what that means. Is that a primary jersey or a secondary jersey?
Okay, so for Columbus Crew has basically been yellow home, black away. And this year they've really thrown everyone a curveball. They have transitioned the black away jersey, which sort of has a subtle checkerboard effect, and they've made that the primary home jersey. Now for this new secondary jersey, like you said, it's for Columbus. It's taken from the Columbus City flag. And this one is, it has to be seen to be believed. It's awful. It may be the worst one this year, from my opinion. It is, I can't even begin to describe it, but here we go. So it's a white base, and it has sort of this highlighter gradient effect down the middle of the chest. And it's very bright. It's very, very bright. Because that's one third of the Columbus City flag. Now, the shirt uses red trim around the collar and the cuffs. And, it's sort of got a McDonald's feel to it. That's been floating around the interwebs. And if you can get past the shirt, then you are hit by electric baby blue shorts. Now, again, this is another part of the flag, but is very jarring on the eye. I think they could have made it work had they used maybe a white short you know, the yell would grab your attention, but it might have worked. But the combination of baby blue shorts, it's awful, and it's a real eyesore.
Yeah, I all it's done is confuse me. It's the yellow on the front. It looks like it should be a white shirt, but then it's like had something spilt all down the front.
So it's exactly
like a big stain and a yellow stain as well on white. It doesn't evoke good things. I don't know. I don't know if this could be like something that becomes a cult jersey in the future. Maybe that's something they think about, but you don't get the sales from that. In 5 years' time, everyone decides, oh yeah, that one was fantastic. That one really stood out. I'm glad they did something different. You need the sales immediately. If everyone thinks it's disgusting, I don't know. There's a marketing approach which is confusing there. The elements of it being the Columbus flag, I suppose, is gonna chime with people maybe. But yeah, it's a shocking shirt, and I don't know whether I mean that in a good way or a bad way. A complete contrast to that is the new. This is always tricky. I often have fun with this on Twitter, and I might do it again. But when you put in New England shirt into Twitter, you suddenly get a lot more interest. So I often tweet something from Design Football. Sorry, I shouldn't be giving up these secrets, but I sometimes tweet New England shirt, and it gets a lot of clicks, surprisingly enough. But I'm talking about New England. Now, can you explain New England to me as well? So New England Revolution, what is New England first?
So New England is the northeast section of the United States. It's in theory centered around Boston, but I mean the state, they actually play in Foxborough, which is outside of Boston. It's sort of that general region. It's sort of the New England, going on back in United States history, sort of that region of the colonies. That's where it started in terms of New England. Then they combined that with the Revolution to come up with New England Revolution. It's not a bad name in, sort of the American sports lexicon. You know, they're nicknamed the Revs. They have a great supporters group. The name is escaping. But basically, after a goal, they shoot like old school muskets. So there's some elements about the team that really work. The elements that don't work is their logo, which is the original logo from 1996, which was bad in the 90s, and now is, I guess it's quasi cool. It's like the 20-year cycle. It's actually cool again, but it is, I mean, it's basically a paint, sort of soccer ball with stars and like wavy red lines. It's awful. Their crest is awful. It's the worst one in MLS. They are one of like two or three remaining teams still using the original crest, and there's of all the teams that should have rebranded, it's them, but they haven't.
Okay. I will respond to that. I think we'll talk about the crest in a little while, and maybe I'll respond to that. But okay. In terms of this season's is this a primary jersey or secondary jersey?
Primary, the home shirt.
This is the new home shirt. This one's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they've gone navy blue. So they usually use navy blue for the home shirts, and the early years, and not so much. But in 2012, 2013, they really stripped it down. They went navy blue, red trim, very, very solid, very clean, no sort of extra flourishes. And the last couple have been really good. I think this continues it, and now with the Adidas stripes moving to the sort of rib torso area. This one really worked. Now, what the big thing for this year is they use a red and blue vertical stripe, sort of half red, half blue stripe down the middle. And then there's a chevron effect at the top of it, right around the top of the chest that frames the shirt sponsor. Now, there's been a lot of stuff going around that's a PSG ripoff, and maybe so. But in terms of just pure appearance, this one really works for me.
Yeah, I do like it, and I think the navy seems so dark that I actually thought it was black. I think it doesn't scream at me. I don't be maybe because of the chevron design and various other things. It doesn't scream Paris Saint-Germain to me. It seems distinct from that, and we haven't really talked about that. But yeah, the Adidas stripes down the sides of the shirts for several of them this season. that makes a massive difference. So it's a classy reference to the manufacturer, but it doesn't draw the eye in the same way that it did when it was on the shoulders on the sleeve. So it allows another design element to stand out from the rest. And in this case, it is that central stripe come chevron design, which is great. And the sponsor looks great on that one as well. It's quite classily done. I think it's a healthcare provider or something like that. So that's really good. Again, contrasted with that, New York Red Bulls, which is one of the most famous clubs in MLS, and particularly because Thierry Henry went to play for him a couple of years ago, that has a different approach. So it's very bold logos and so on. Something I noticed about that is they have the name of the club, but also like essentially the Red Bull energy drink on the lower back. Now, what are the regulations about that? Why is that allowed?
I don't know the exact regulations. I know that, as I spoke about earlier, before they used to have like MasterCard all over the place. And in the early years, there was a lot of just slapped on logos all over the place. And they got rid of that. And this is more of a, I don't know what we're trying to replicate. I know a lot of German shirts have some sort of sponsor on the back. And I don't know whether it's a sort of shout out to that or what they're trying to do, but yeah, it's right on the back, right above the hem. And in terms of the exact regulations, I guess I don't know.
Yeah, it's something that wouldn't be allowed. A secondary sponsor wouldn't be allowed. They basically are the sponsor as well, which is a strange thing. It's strange also because the shirt is quite a classic design, but then you suddenly have these big bold logos. But I don't know. That sort of shirt is why people in Europe will sometimes scoff at MLS and say, "Well, it's not proper. It's not going to be something that's in competition with us because they still do things like that." But it's completely in contrast to other sports, like we've mentioned before, where we just don't have that sort of advertising. But yeah, an interesting design in the way it's presented like that. Another team. Seattle Sounders, they've got a new primary and third jersey, haven't they?
Yeah, so Seattle is hipster, pretentious, hated, loved. They're a whole bunch of things. I mean, even in terms of their color palette, it's rave green, cascade shale, and sounder blue. Like, those are the actual official colors. And they've kind of played around with these over the years. And what they've done for their home shirt is it's always been sort of this, you know, rave green with sort of the sounder blue trim. And this year, one of the things that Adidas has done for MLS is sort of do the solid sort of chest, the main part of the jersey, and contrasting sleeves. They've done a couple of shirts like that. And this one is sort of the rave green body with the sounder blue sleeves. I really like this one. I think it takes a design element and it combines it with colors and it really makes it work.
In this country, we have a rhyme that, now there's various versions of this. So there's blue and green should never be seen. And then some people say with nothing in between. Now for that shirt is exactly that. So it's green body with blue sleeves. And that for kit geeks, that instantly brings to mind an Arsenal shirt an Arsenal away shirt, I think, from the early 80s, which is regarded as a terrible shirt, but some people, it's like a cult classic now, and they've reproduced it. The way it works on that shirt, it's because I think it's quite a popular team, and a lot of people, I think Clint Dempsey played for them, or I don't know if he still does. So a lot of people in this country still, they know the Seattle Sounders, and it's those colors are tied to them, and maybe it's accepted, but when the team came out and they were wearing those colors straight away, what was the reaction to it? Was it that's terrible, or is it something that's eventually people have come to terms with?
For the Seattle Sounders, those are their colors, like even from when they played in the old NASL and they were bouncing around the, you know, USL in preparation of joining MLS. That has been their colors, so I could see how, from a non-American perspective, it could be like either the blue and green together or those colors specifically could be kind of jarring. But for Americans, it's like that is what they've always been, and it's just, it makes sense. We just accept it.
Okay. Now the new third jersey. This is one I really liked, but you're not a big fan of it, are you?
I'm not, only because, we've talked several times about Adidas taking chances and flexing design muscle, as you said. This one, Seattle in particular, has really experimented with their third jerseys. And if you Google search them, you will find some, like, you have to wear sunglasses for the one of their first ones. It was electric yellow. It's bright. And they've taken another chance on this one as well. It's a navy blue sort of heathered t-shirt effect, which I don't mind so much. And then they introduced a new color, which they call Pacific Blue. It's sort of, again, it's this highlighter baby blue sort of shade that has been introduced, and that's used as the sort of the accenting, contrasting color. And that does not bug me so much as, again, the shorts. The shorts don't work for me. I think if they continued with the navy blue as the shorts and socks, that would have worked for me. But the shorts don't work for me. That was my biggest thing.
Yeah, I completely disagree with all that, I think. The shorts, I've only seen like the top part of the shorts because on the picture I saw it was just mainly focused on the shirt. So I'm gonna look into what the shorts are, but I think they're gonna be like my hipster purchase, and I'm gonna buy a pair of those shorts to wear to the gym. I do like the look of those, so I'm gonna look into that. It probably cost me about £5,000 to have them shipped over from the US, but it'll be worth it. So I'm the best dressed person in the gym. The other thing is, and you've mentioned this, I do like base layers, and that sort of marle effect, whatever it is that they've done with the jersey, I know the answer to this question, but the base layer should have the same effect. And if it hasn't got the same effect, then I'm going to be furious about it. But I know
And
that it won't have it.
that was a red flag I saw coming.
Okay.
Yeah,
All right. Fair enough.
because I mean, based on our previous conversations and your podcast, I know that it would be amazing. I think it would be amazing just to see once a base layer that sort of took a design element from a shirt and continued it. Because I imagine the base layer would probably be navy blue or whatever, but it would be interesting to see that. I don't. For me, on TV, you wouldn't even see it unless it was like a close up, like on a corner kick or something. So from far away, it would still look navy blue. But I think, for your particular taste, I think it would be amazing.
Thank you for thinking of me. Well, the Adidas, that is the gauntlet set down for you. So let's see if they could do it. I don't think they're going to do it this season, but maybe. Now those are all the shirts that I was interested in talking about. Is there anything else that any other standout shirts, maybe new ones or existing ones that have grabbed your attention?
I guess for the new ones, I really liked two come to mind. One would be the Philadelphia Union home shirt. Now, Philadelphia has a lot of patriotic references to their whole branding, so you kind of have to buy into that to understand their shirt. But anyway, it's a navy blue body with a khaki or goldish band down the middle. So if you think Ajax and you reverse out the colors to navy blue and khaki down the middle, that has been basically their shirt since the beginning, with just basic variations. What they did this year is they have a snake, which has historical reference and whatever, but they use a snake skin design element down the middle, and I really like that. It really works for me in terms of the color and how they were able to use sort of the snake skin image. And I think the other one I really like is Orlando City's away shirt. They're a second year team, so they kept the home shirt, which is all purple. They sort of own it, like Anderlecht or Fiorentina. But what they did with their away shirt is they did this contrasting sleeves. It's another example of the contrasting sleeves, which I really like. It's the white body with these purple sleeves, and that one really works for me. It's a nice contrast. It keeps their purple. Orlando, like I said, really owns the purple, but then it uses a white so that they can wear it on the road or whatever. So those two I particularly liked.
Okay, we'll check those out as well. By the way, all of these jerseys, I would imagine, can be found on footballshirtculture.com. So if you go on there, most of the recent releases will be the MLS ones, because they've been the ones that have been most notable recently over the last few weeks.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Just something we've touched on is the crests. Now, my stance on the new, and it's something you've said, but New England, when that team first came about, so 20 years ago, let's say, when I saw the crest, I probably would have been appalled by it. Now, this is like the New York Red Bulls thing. It's almost as if that is what sets apart the MLS from the rest of the world. Now, where they fall short, I think, is where they try to replicate crests that we have in this country, where, let's say, the club is 120 years old and it's got a very intricate, ornate crest. And if you try to do that in America, it just doesn't really work, because you have different principles, not in America, but in the modern day, we have different principles regarding how to carry out branded. So where it's like halfway between this historical crest and the new crest is where it goes wrong. Something like that, which was obvious branding and was very bold. So it's a wavy American flag. And the stars element in the corner looks exactly like a Champions League ball. So a European Champions League football. And I don't know whether that logo was already in place or whether people are looking to sue or what, but I actually love the New England Revolution crest. With the other crests, I'm not too keen. Some of them are quite bold. There's an LA team, but LA, is there a new LA team? Is that right?
LAFC, yep.
LAFC. So they've got, is it a wing or something on the crest? That one I like as well.
Yep, they released that maybe a month ago, and they use a very classical, a lot of classical elements. I believe the badge is the shape of the LA City badge. They took that, and then they use sort of a very artsy font for the L and the A, and the wing comes out of the A. It looks really sharp, and it's you know, the team has not played yet. There's a lot of speculation about what this team will be and will do. But from a branding perspective, I mean, that their merchandise is going to sell and sell a lot.
Yeah, and that is the modern approach. And that's when we rebrand, when European clubs rebrand, it's always met with, it's not welcomed, let's say, because it's like you're binning history. In America, especially with new clubs like that, it's you have the blank canvas and you could create something iconic from nowhere. And because it's a relatively new league, all right, 20 years now, but in our eyes, compared with the European leagues, it's a new league. To carry on releasing new things, it maybe is something that people are more accepting of. And yeah, like that one is a great logo, and it's in terms of marketing, it's sure to do well. So that's great. The one thing that confuses me, and I don't know whether it's something to do with the marketing, and I'm just wrong on it, but a lot of the crests seem to be printed on, or it's like a transfer rather than embroidered logos. So some of them, the embroidered look would improve it, I think. Is that on the replica shirts, are they embroidered, or are they just like a plasticky design?
It really does depend. I know that, you know, there's some, you know, some players I think would prefer the heat transfer. There's less sort of rubbing in that chest area. And then, you know, then there's the extra cost and whatever. But sometimes, yeah, I think it really depends on the individual crest, whether the heat transfer or the embroider would work. Some of them are quite complicated, and that'd be a lot of stitching, and I'm not sure it would come across that well. I'm thinking of like maybe Columbus Crew with those sort of the inner circle. There's diagonals and checkers. I'm not sure if that would work. But yeah, it's kind of a little bit of each.
Yeah, I know on the marketing, because I sometimes go to the online store for a lot of these clubs, and I see that they sell both versions, almost a standard. So you could get the player version or you get the stadium version, they call it, which is like what we call a replica shirt. So I don't know if we're in the marketing, they may be showing the player's jersey. So that's why it has a heat transfer crest rather than an embroidered crest, or if any of them are actually embroidered if you buy them in the stores. I don't know. That is where the balance comes in again. If it is an old style crest, then maybe it would work embroidered. So the New England one, despite it being a modern design in the 90s, I still think that one would work quite well being embroidered. And it looks a little bit cheap if it's done another way. Some of them have got metallic elements as well. So some of them have got like shiny, reflective. And so there's certainly a lot going on in the MLS that we don't see in the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's one of the one of the recent trends is, I think it's called lenticular printing. You know, someone way smarter than me might know the actual, but anyway, they've tried this 3D printing element, and so that the crest has depth and texture. I know that I think Chicago's this year is supposed to have that, and I want to say Philadelphia. I'd have to go through all my notes, but I know that's something that they're trying. And again, that podcast I referenced before on Extra Time Radio, they had tried it in the past, and it didn't work. It looked awful, and they've continued to play with it. And they're really excited about the Chicago one. So if you can sort of get a visual on that, I would definitely suggest finding that.
Okay. Something else MLS jerseys have. They recently changed the logo. So a couple of years ago, they got a new logo for the MLS, which the old one looked a little bit like the baseball one, I think. That sort of approach. The new one is very, very different. So there are several elements to the new, say, 2 years old MLS crest or corporate logo. What are the elements to that?
Yeah, like you said, the old ones was a sort of rounded, rectangular, had a foot coming through, kicking a soccer ball, and said MLS or Major League Soccer. And that lasted, you know, almost 20 years in sort of different iterations, but basically the rectangular box. In last year, or late 2014, they blew it up, and they have rebranded MLS as a league, and they redid the website. And they did all stuff. So the basic shape is a shield that most people would be familiar with. And they put the letters MLS in the upper left-hand corner. And then after that, it gets kind of, I don't know, a little pretentious. They have a slash that cuts the thing in half that represents the first half and the second half, so they say. There's the stars that represent their values. It's club, country, and community. The perimeter represents the lines that mark the field of play. And then they have the kickstand, which the slash continues through the shield and sort of comes out the other side. And there's this like little part that's hanging off that's been nicknamed the kickstand. Then you have this white area, which was when that first was released, people put all kinds of stuff in there, both appropriate and inappropriate. But anyway, that was sort of a window into the league. I mean, it's a shield that's cut in half and says MLS. That's what it looks like. But then they put all this stuff on top of it and sort of take it for what's worth.
Okay. This changes on each team depending on the team's colors. Is that right? So on the sleeve?
Correct. So okay. The primary colors are used for the trim and the sort of solid part of the shield and so on.
Okay. So this is something that I don't know if it's actually going to happen, but there's talk about it happening with the new Premier League logo in the UK, which is very, very corporate. The idea is that maybe the Premier League colours of this patch on the sleeve will change for different clubs in the Premier League. So in the same way as the MLS. So that's a strange influence into Europe, which is coming from the MLS, which is interesting as well. Something else that MLS jerseys have is a jock tag. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, I can now because I saw that as well. And I guess I'd always known that there were jock tags. I just didn't know what they were called. So in a very American thing, in the same way that a lot of soccer jerseys say either authentic or replica, and then they have a series of numbers along the hem, what American sports have done is either they used to do by size, so you knew which size you were buying, and they would put other design elements, you know, either the manufacturer or some sort of shout out down there. But what MLS has done over the last couple of years is introduce has taken this jock tag concept and they put things down there that are either usually historical. So for instance, like the Seattle Sounders, their jock tag is the, I think one of the original Sounder logos, I think is theirs. Philadelphia Union, the snake that I mentioned earlier, it's this coiled gold snake down there. LA's is they're working on this theme of this is LA, so that's theirs down there. So it's either part of the crest or some sort of historical reference. It's just a little design element that I don't know. It sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. For me, I could take it or leave it.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure which team it is. I assume it's Houston, but they have the Texan flag, do they? One of the Texas teams has a yep. Texan flag down there. Is that right?
Yep. Which for me is sort of a lot of them blend in, you know, or a nice contrast. This one almost is too. So the Texas flag is blue, red, and white. So on the black, it sort of jumps out and not in a good way.
Yeah, that's the most striking one that I've seen, because obviously it's a simple and recognizable flag. But like you say, if it's in complete colors completely different to the club actually wearing, and then it's going to stand out that way. Just for people who don't know this, MLS now has a new stars system. Now it seems very, very early days for in a league's history to be having stars on jerseys. So how does the new stars system work?
So this has been a lot of a big, I don't know, subject of consternation. You know, Juventus gets, you know, in Italy, you get, the gold star for every 10 Scudetti and, you know, every 10 Coppa Italia wins. So there's, it makes sense. And, you know, other teams just sort of incorporate it for European wins or whatever. MLS has this convoluted system, and I think it overcomplicates things. I think it should, so, you know, MLS, you know, it's an American league. We do things a different way. Like we have a playoff system. Basically, you win the league, you win what's called the supporter shield. And that was created completely from the supporters. Before, it wasn't recognized anything as the number, unless other than the number one seed in the playoffs. So supporters create an actual trophy that goes from team to team that signifies that you were the best team in the league during the season. Now, we don't play everyone home and away, and there are several other factors that make it an American league, which doesn't translate to other leagues around the world. But anyway, so then you get the playoff system. So then really the MLS Cup team is recognized as the MLS champion. That's how that works. So obviously, you know, MLS sees other teams around the world using a star. So they're like, okay, well, let's use a star. And then it was sort of non-standard. So, like, you know, LA Galaxy had a bunch of stars because they won a bunch of trophies. DC United had a bunch of stars because they won a bunch of trophies. But then other teams started introducing a star and so on and so forth. So here we go. I'm going to try to explain this from the MLS website as best I can. So the defending champion, so that's Portland Timbers for this year, will have a star over their crest with the year that they won. So that's one champion. And then, you know, if you've won two championships, you get a gold star and then a silver star underneath it for every one that you've won. And then for a five championships, you get a gold star that stays over your crest forever. And then as you go out, it changes from gold to silver, and then basically a gold star, silver star. The gold star is for the actual year that you won it. It's sort of like that FIFA shield that they get for the Club World Cup champion or the World Cup champions. So it's kind of convoluted. Basically, if you really want to see it, go to the MLSsoccer.com website and check it out. But that they're trying to make it more uniform instead of people just willy-nilly putting stars above their shirt, above their crests.
Yeah, the idea of stars so early is confusing, because as you say, in European competition, it's 10 domestic titles. Generally speaking, it's 10 domestic titles, or it's winning the European Cup, let's say. Some people will put a star above that. And sometimes they're actually recognised by leagues. Sometimes they're just stuff you put on there. So Juventus, as you mentioned, they had, I think maybe three stars when they were only allowed two, or they got a kit from Nike which only had two stars on it, and they got angry about it because they actually regard themselves of having one enough Scudetti worthy of three stars. So they put tape over the two stars, so they had no stars. So that's complicated enough. But when a league decides to do it and does it on the current champion, and then if you've won five, and then if you've won two, and if you won two in a row, this is not something, and you've explained it as well as it possibly could be explained in this format. I think you do need to go to the website and check it out with the pictures. It does make sense, but it's complicated, and it's overly complicated, and it's probably entirely unnecessary at this stage. But it's something like, as a US team, do US teams win the, is there a Champions League, isn't there, that also includes Mexican teams and Canadian teams? Is that?
Yep, there's the CONCACAF Champions League. So CONCACAF, is North and Central America. So it's Canada, United States, Mexico, and then some of the Caribbean countries. And it's a two-stage tournament. There's a group stage. So the group stage happened in the fall, and then the knockout phase, eight teams make the knockout phase. That's going to kick off here shortly. And then the winner of that's home and away. The knockout phase is home and away, including the final. And the winner of that is the CONCACAF representative at the Club World Cup.
Okay. And so as a US, as an MLS team, ever won that?
Not in the current format. DC United, I believe, won in the early 90s. And I think only two MLS Cups have even made the MLS teams have even made the final. So last year, Montreal made the final, but of course they're from Canada. But they lost to Club America, I'm pretty sure, in home and away. It's dominated by Mexican teams. MLS teams are lucky to get to the final. There are several reasons for that we won't go into, but MLS teams very rarely make the final, and they've never been to this Club World Cup as we know it today.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that progresses. Obviously, the popularity of the league is increasing, and as it grows, I suppose better players will continue to come to the to MLS, and perhaps earlier in their careers as well. So we'll see if they do improve, and maybe yeah, they'll bag themselves a few of those. Regarding the future as well, so I think this is probably something that's quite important to you. The Atlanta are getting a new team, is that right?
Correct. So they'll kick off about a year from now, March 2017.
Okay. So we don't know what, we know what colours they're going to wear. We don't know what kits they're going to wear as yet. I think there are designs on designfootball.com, and probably it's in need of a competition. So we'll probably put a competition on there so we could have an idea of what people think they should be wearing. The crest is something that already has been designed. Now, I would describe this in more ways than one as fucking A. Would that be correct?
Yes, it's a very bold A in the center of a circle, which is framed by black and red horizontal stripes. The A is the metallic gold of Atlanta United, and it's a very basic design, but I like it. It's clean, it's timeless. It's not, I don't think it will date like some of the other crests do. Is it the best crest ever seen in the history of the world? No, but it's very down the middle, and I think it'll hold up pretty well.
Yeah, I think what I've been saying, whether it's rubbish or correct or not, but that one seems to marry very well, brilliantly marry the old idea of traditional crests with the idea of very bold the marketing, here is what our symbol is in very simple terms. So that one seems to do it very well. The colors of the club, what are they going to be?
So I forgot to write it down. But anyway, the red is victory red. The black is sort of a dark charcoaly black. And then it's a metallic gold. It's not like a bright gold. It's more subtle than that. And the three colors go really well together.
So are we thinking AC Milan kits then?
That's what we're thinking. I think that there's a void there in terms of for people who may or may not know MLS history. So the old New York New Jersey Metro Stars used to have the vertical black and red stripes, and then they became New York Red Bulls, and their color scheme got completely overhauled. But I think that that's their colors. It will mimic the crest in the way that Montreal sort of did a mimic their crest with the black and red, more of an inter design. But I think black and red stripes for sure on the home shirt is the way to go with that. Now the away shirt could kind of be all over the place. There's a lot of ways they could go. I know when you came on my podcast, we talked about a possible gold away shirt that, again, you know, would have to be executed correctly or else it'll look awful. My guess is that they will go white to start, and then when they sort of get their feet underneath them, they'll probably maybe introduce a gold. But my guess is that a black and red home and then a white away.
Okay, ideal. Well, good luck to them then. And we look forward to seeing those kits. And yeah, I think it needs a competition on designfootball.com. This has been fantastic, Austin. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been an absolute education for me. As you've probably concluded, I am a moron when it comes to American soccer. So it's been great to speak to you, and I've learned a lot. Just for people's information, Austin does run the Soccer Nomad blog. The address for that is soccernomad.wordpress.com. And Austin could also be contacted on Twitter, which is at AustinLong1974. So if you have any queries, then give Austin a shout. Thank you again, Austin. I hope this has been enjoyable for you and I haven't annoyed you too much.
Oh, no, this has been great. Looking at the new kits, it's always exciting to see them rolled out. And, you know, I've almost had some hits and some misses, but it's been great to talk about.
Ideal. So we'll be having someone else on the podcast in the next episode. Not sure who that is yet, but stay tuned for that. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. So that's designfootball.com and designfootball respectively. And if you wanted to speak to me, I'm J29ers on Twitter. Thanks very much. Bye bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.